This message is part of the educational ministry of Columbia International University. We've been preparing world Christians to know Him and to make Him known since 1923.
My name is Sam Goodwin, and my wife Elizabeth and I are, as Rick mentioned, are both CIU graduates. About 15 years ago, I graduated from the seminary, and about 11 years ago, I suppose, my wife Elizabeth graduated. As a family, we've been called by MTW, or Mission to the World, which is the mission arm for the PCA, or the Presbyterian Church in America, to plant churches in England. That would be my wife, Elizabeth, and my oldest daughter with the brown hair is Katie, and the youngest is Sophie with the blonde hair. Now, yep, yeah, they're cute. And there it is, our family. And now, Katie is our oldest. She's about 5 and a half. Sophie is our second now, and that's 4. And in Georgia, we nicknamed her Simmy, with food all over her face, is our youngest. Now, the story of Simmy and her name is a long story. I won't take the time here to talk about it. If you're interested in finding out, you can ask me whenever we get the chance. But I said we were headed to England, but that's no longer the case. We now appear to be headed to Germany, if you wondered why the German flag was sitting on our on the first photo there. And the events that have taken us from going to Hull, England, to Munich, Germany, are events that we're going to talk about this morning. In some ways, this story is about Simmy. But in other ways, really, fundamentally, she's simply the foil. She's just the means that we're going to use to talk about what God's been doing. And I hope that it's an encouraging time for you all. What I want to do is I want to read 3 scripture passages briefly. I'm only going to comment on them very briefly, and then we'll launch into the story. The first passage is Philippians 1, verses 12 through 13. It says, I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. 1 Peter 3:15. But in your hearts, honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you. Yet do it with gentleness and respect. Finally, Matthew 14, verses 22 through 33. Immediately, this is right after the feeding of the 5,000, immediately he made the disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side while he dismissed the crowds. And after he had dismissed the crowds, he went up on the mountain to pray by himself to pray. When evening came, he was there alone. But the boat by this time was a long way from the land, beaten by the waves, for the wind was against them. And in the fourth watch of the night, he came to them walking on the sea. But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified and said, "It is a ghost!" And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Take heart, it is I. Do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." And he said, "Come." So Peter got out of the boat and walked on the water and came to Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and he began to sink. And so he cried out, "Lord, save me!" And Jesus immediately reached out his hand and took hold of him, saying to him, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased, and those in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." This is the word of the Lord. A comment on 1 Peter 3:15 only briefly to say, having a hope and being able to articulate the hope that is within you prior to and in the midst of good times, suffering, and persecution is really important. Knowing what is true is important. Because you see, when you get into the middle of life, and some of you have probably already experienced this, it won't always feel true. this gospel thing, this God thing, this Jesus thing, it won't always feel true. So knowing what you believe will be critical as you get into life. And in reference to Matthew 14, if you've been a believer or been alive for any length of time, which it looks like you have, the storms are going to come. The storms may be really bad. And who and what will you trust in the midst of those storms? After I'm done with the part of our story, my wife Elizabeth has written a song in reference to this, and it's based on this chapter, based on this passage of Matthew 14, of Jesus walking, of Peter walking on the water. And remember, that as Peter walks on the water, this isn't the passage where Jesus says, "Peace be still." Peter is being asked to get out of the boat, walk on the water while the storms are high, the waves are all about him, and even then in the midst of that, to trust. Title is The Advancement of the Gospel. Again, Philippians 1, verses 12 through 13. I want you to know, brothers, that what has happened to me has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the whole imperial guard and to all the rest that my imprisonment is for Christ. And as it is with Paul's conclusion regarding his imprisonment, so it is our prayer regarding our lives. My prayer is that all that has happened with our family, and our daughter will really serve to advance the gospel. First off, to those who have been following our story or know who we are, I'm Simi's dad. The reason I say this is a colleague and friend of mine told me that when I speak to people around the country or even the world, I need to introduce myself as Simi's dad, because then they'll know exactly who I am. Otherwise, they'll just stare at me blankly or smile politely. To those who have not been following our story, who don't know who I am, or who Simi is, I'm simply Sam Goodwin. And second, Georgia Simi Goodwin, an affectionate little child of no great prior fame, was my third and my youngest daughter. She was a little girl who, at the age of 6 months old, was diagnosed with AML, a rare aggressive form of leukemia, and especially unusual for someone her age. Just about 6 months later, on the morning of July 13th, 2011, the Lord took her to himself, leaving her mother, her father, two sisters, extended family, and countless others to grieve the loss of a dear little girl who had captured the hearts of virtually everyone who had met her, and even those who had simply heard her story or seen her picture. I've been asked to share a bit of our story and what we know of what God has done, and I say know of what God has done because I'm certain that God is working in ways that we may never know this side of glory. In some ways, this is a personal story. In some ways, this is a missions update. And in some ways, I hope, this is an encouragement to you. So what follows is divided up into four sections. What we've done, what we've heard, what we've learned, and then what we've concluded so far. But because I cannot possibly share, nor actually do I think you're would have the time or interest in hearing or reading all that we've done, heard, learned, or concluded, I suppose each point could be preceded by some of. So it is the sum of what we've done, some of what we've heard, and so forth. So, section one, some of what we've done. For the last 4 years, my wife Elizabeth and our whole family have been actively preparing to go as missionaries of the gospel of Jesus Christ to England, a country in desperate need of that gospel. We visited churches all up and down the East Coast, and we've shared our vision for where we were certain God was calling us and asked people to pray for all that God was doing and was going to do in England. We visited Hull, regarded as the least evangelized city in all of England, a city of over 250,000 people where only 0.1% hear the gospel on any regular basis. The pastor and his wife, with whom we would be working, were elated that we were on our way, and they've been laboring there now for over 12 years in a city that has shown little to no fruit for their labors. Finally, they would be getting some much-needed help and encouragement. We were at 94% of our needed support. It had gone to Belgium this last, not January a year ago to complete our last step of pre-field training before heading to the field. We even activated our visas while we were there. We were planning on heading to England sometime in the spring of 2011, and we're trying to figure out while we were in Belgium how we were going to get everything done that needed to be done before we left. Sell the house, pack our belongings, ship our belongings, find a place to live in Hull, say our goodbyes, and so forth. I tell you this because I want you to get a feel for our trajectory. This has been our life. We have hundreds of churches and individuals on our mailing list who would get our weekly newsletter called The Weekly Weather, and who know us as that missionary family headed to England. Well, while we were in Belgium in January, all this appeared to come to a screeching halt. Our six-month-old baby girl was diagnosed with leukemia, so we raced back to the States to begin treatment, and so found ourselves sitting in a room on the fifth floor of the Richland Memorial Children's Hospital here in Columbia, South Carolina, for what was not going to be an overnight stay. Suddenly, everything was on hold. Our story stops. No missions, no ministry, no outreach. All that we were doing was for naught. No England, no Hull, no nothing. What a huge inconvenience. Life would have to be put on hold until this whole awful thing was resolved. The problem, you see, is this is actually where the story begins. This is where missions, ministry, and outreach took a form we would never have expected. England, Hull, churches, and individuals around the world were impacted in some of the most remarkable ways. I received a note from a friend of ours asking me if I thought this was a speed bump, a detour, or a change in direction. Were we being slowed down by circumstances before God would ultimately get us where He wanted us? Were we being forced to get off the path a bit before He got us back on the main road where we would merge into the ministry He had planned for us? Or was this God's way of saying that He was changing His plans for us altogether? I suggested to him that none of these was the case. I suggested to him that this was not a speed bump, not a detour, and not a change in direction. Our plans were to be in England in the spring of 2011, but it was never God's plan that we were there in the spring of 2011. He hadn't altered His goals for us. They had never changed. From the very beginning, God had planned for us to be sitting in a hospital in Columbia, South Carolina, in the spring and summer of 2011. His perfect plan for us was for us to plan and prepare and to work to be in England in the spring of 2011, but not actually to be there. And so there we were, sitting, apparently, where God had placed us and stumbling along the dark path that He had set before us. But that's simply what we've been doing. That doesn't tell the whole story, or actually even the interesting parts. What makes the story remotely interesting and at all encouraging is to hear some of what we have heard that God has been doing. And following are only some, so it is section two, some of what we've heard, some of what we've read and heard about what God has been doing over the last year. In Simi's life, God has used her to impact more people than I have impacted in my over 45 years. Her Caring Bridge website, a website, health website, if any of you are familiar with it, had over 81,000 hits by the time she passed away, representing well over 2,000 people, churches, and organizations. People from over 30 countries were following her progress and praying on a daily basis, and almost every time zone was covered with people praying around the world. Churches in Hull, England, joined with each other to pray for her. By the way, this is unheard of. There are five churches in Hull, England. None of them fellowship with each other because each one is the wrong stripe of evangelical. If you're not Baptist enough, we don't pray with you. If you're not Reformed enough, we don't pray with you, or Anglican enough, and so forth. And now they were gathering together to pray for this little girl whom most of them had never met. Actually, none of them had ever met. Why were people around the world, particularly who would never pray with each other, praying for a girl whom they'd never met. It was because for the last 4 years, we've been traveling around and building relationships with people and the people in Hull. So God has used that for the advancement of the gospel. People in other countries were writing journal entries on their website in other languages because their English wasn't good enough. A pastor of a supporting church of ours wrote to tell us that his sister was a bone marrow transplant specialist down in Charleston, South Carolina, where we were ultimately supposed to go for Simi's transplant. And if the opportunity presented, he hoped we would get a chance to meet her because he so very much wanted her to grow in her walk with the Lord, and he hoped we would have the opportunity to meet her and share and live out the gospel with her. She was, in fact, the head of pediatric oncology and transplants there, and she was our doctor. Why did we have a relationship with this doctor before we even got down to Charleston? It's because 4 years before, while we were planning and working on going to England, we were in a church, visiting a church just north of Atlanta. And they were supporting us as we were going to head to England. But the reality was that one of the pastors of that church had a sister who was a doctor, and he wanted us to meet and know that doctor. And so we used our situation, sitting in a hospital room, for the advancement of the gospel. One woman wrote to us that she was from Rochester, Minnesota, and she was praying for us because her pastor there had told her church about us. I've never met or heard of that pastor before. Another woman from Australia wrote a couple days later. She wrote to tell us that she was praying because a friend of hers from Rochester, Minnesota, had told her that her pastor had told her about us. Others said that they'd never been active prayers before, but now they were praying every single day for Simi. Still others said that their children had become little prayer warriors and would ask after and pray for Simi every night. We received letters from a woman in Pennsylvania who was a member of a local Methodist church there, and she was praying for us. How did she even find out about us? My guess is that there was a PCA pastor who was a colleague of mine in Andrews, South Carolina, just this side of Georgetown, who is a friendship with the woman who is the pastor of the Methodist church there. He told her about our story and asked her to pray. And from there, a member of her church, who providentially is the editor of a worldwide newsletter to the United Methodist Church, decided to put our story in one of the monthly editions. And now people all over the world are praying for Simi, even from completely different denominations. Multiple seminaries sent out our story to all of their students, faculty, and alum. And people whom we have never met, heard of our story from people whom we have never met, and they were praying. Standing in the greeting line at the memorial service, someone came up to me and told me of her daughter who attended a church down in Tallahassee, Florida. Apparently, three different people had read our website and subsequently came to a saving knowledge of Jesus Christ. Other people in that same line told us of having heard a DJ on one of the largest listened to pop rock radio stations in South Carolina, B106, mention the obituary for our little girl on the air. The station is heard, as you know, over most all the state of South Carolina, and right in the middle of rush hour traffic, perhaps the time of day when the most people are listening, the DJ shifts from his normal banter and says, "I don't normally do this, and I know it may sound depressing, but you all need to go out and read this obituary and the Caring Bridge website. This is different. There's hope in this family." Simi was, by any who met her, a people gatherer. Doctors and nurses would come from other floors and buildings to see her. Attending physicians would argue over who got to hold her or perform procedures on her. It's terribly unprofessional. They would change their rounds to make sure that they could sit with her as long as they wanted to and end the day, as they put it, on a high note. And as they would sit and smile and close her eyes and hold little Simi, she would lay her head on their chest and pat them on their shoulders. These are only a few of the many, many stories that we've either heard of or been witness to, but they have highlighted and taught us a number of things. So it is section 3, some of what we've learned. 1, that God never intended for us to be in England in the spring of 2011. He simply intended for us to plan to be in England then. For 4 years, God was laying the groundwork in preparation for this event. He was creating and building relationships and circumstances so that when Simi fell sick, people would be driven to their knees, people from myriad denominations, countries, and backgrounds. Children, teens, and adults prayed and fasted for her healing and for God's glory, all gathering before the same great God with the same hope and confidence, all made possible through the same access, Jesus Christ. 2. Knowing what you believe and why you believe it is remarkably helpful to know before hardships come. Figuring it out once you're in the battle means you're having to deal with two problems at the same time. 1, what you believe about God, about life, meaning, purpose, hope. And 2, how you're going to navigate this terrible problem that's been laid before your feet. I don't know about you, but I'm only good, perhaps, and dealing with one problem at a time. 3, Simi was a missionary, par excellence. She was the means that God used to reach people with the gospel in places and ways which we had never dreamed of. God used her, the unique personality with which he gifted her, and the daily little updates of her mom and dad to impact his kingdom for his glory. 4, that though this journey has taken us far afield of where we thought the Lord was taking us, we don't see that his call on our lives has changed. As far as we know, we're still heading into missions as planned. The timing has changed, the field has changed, and our circumstances have changed. But MTW and its leaders have taken up the task of helping us find the best fit for us and those whom we seek to serve, wherever specifically that may be. And 5thly, what we've learned is that being used for good doesn't equal good. Being used for good doesn't equal good. Simi's sickness and death was not good. It was bad. I can take great encouragement that this bad thing that happened, this bad thing that was a result of sin and the fall of man, was ordained by God long before Simi was born so that he might do something great. I prayed 1,000 times over that he might do something great another way. But then again, so did Christ in the garden. And yet the Father saw fit to use the greatest evil the world had ever perpetuated, that of evil men killing the only perfect person ever to live, in a way that would bring the greatest good the world had ever seen. And now finally, after some of what we've done, heard, and learned in this whole process, this is some of what I've concluded so far. 1 is that God is working in more ways than I will ever know this side of glory. But most profoundly, to paraphrase Paul, while he sits in prison writing to the church in Philippi, I am certain that what has happened to Simi and our family has really served to advance the gospel, so that it has become known throughout the world and all those looking on that our lives and our suffering are for Christ. I've concluded that sickness and cancer and suffering and death stink. They're gut-wrenchingly horrible. I've concluded that figuring out who and what is true in the middle of suffering means you've nothing and no one to cling to while your world turns upside down. So figure it out now. Suffering, to be sure, means that there are details which will have to be worked out and refined. But trusting the hard stuff of suffering and sadness to the one who willingly came and impoverished himself and suffered and died because he loves you is the only place to be. And finally, I've concluded that I know so little. I can't see behind the curtain. I can't see God's plan. I feel and I mourn our loss deeply. And as we walk this dark path, I say with Job, with tear-filled eyes, "The Lord giveth, the Lord taketh. Blessed be the name of the Lord."
We hope you were blessed by this message. Additional audio messages and learning resources are available at www.ciu.edu/bookstore or call 803-807-5263. Messages are also available by podcast at iTunes. CIU is a regionally accredited biblical university offering undergraduate and graduate degree programs. Our purpose is to educate people from a biblical worldview to impact the nations with the message of Christ. Thank you for letting us minister to you today.